Hare Krishna. So, see a few newcomers, so let me just give a brief introduction of Maharaj. His Holiness Bhakti Raghava Maharaj became a devotee during 1970s, early 70s, and he got initiated here in New Vrindavan in 1974. So it was in July of, of 1974 that he got initiated. And Maharaj has been traveling extensively and preaching. He was 16 years in Mayapur, where he was very active in preaching in the Namahatta. And now we have a huge Namahatta building, very successful preaching going on there. He was also the pioneer for the youth preaching all over the world. He started the Bhakti Vedanta Youth Services, which is now popularly called ISKCON Youth Forum. The model of how to preach was given by him, and it's now very popular. Maharaj, after 16 years in India, he spent quite a lot of time in Indonesia and Cambodia, the Asian countries, and he has successfully developed some close-knit intentional communities or Varnashrama farm communities. So there are three of them in Indonesia, small ones, but one big one called Gita Nagari Baru, which is called New Gita Nagari, which is recognized by government of Indonesia as a village. So Maharaj has been extensively working on Varnashrama Dharma, trying to introduce this, which was already Prabhupada's 50%, to introduce this within ISKCON. And today, thanks to our temple president, Jai Krishna Prabhu, and thanks to all devotees, we are able to organize this nice seminar, which will talk exclusively about this whole aspect of Varnashrama and the little nitty-gritties, the details involved. There is a lot of details, but today we will, in these 3 days, we will understand broadly about how it was practiced in the Vedic system and why is it important for our society. His Holiness Bhakti Raghava Maharaj Ki!
Hare Krishna. just turn around a little bit here. So, just to give a little bit of background information, the presentation actually for the next 3 days is a kind of a summary of something a little bit more extensive that I was working on in Canada actually for the last 3.5 months. The title of the course is actually Dharma Shastri. Now for someone who, I actually prepared the course, I guess the audience can vary. It is simultaneously, I would say, both for newcomers in that it gives introduction and basic information about some very important fundamental terms and ideals or ideologies within, let's say, the Vedic culture on the one hand. And then on the other hand, of course, it covers some very basic information that many of our devotees and members of ISKCON are knowing about. But I would think some aspects which are possibly also new or maybe less known to even devotees within our ISKCON society. The conference or the seminar is not exclusively on Varnashram because as the title suggests, it is, that will be explained actually in the presentation. Those who are devotees of Krishna consciousness give major importance to the concept of dharma. Every day, actually, we practice what is called different principles of dharma. And dharma is, again, that will be explained. What is, I suppose, a special feature of this presentation is that it endeavors to give two very clear and I would say supportive understanding of the concept of dharma. Dharma is often understood as simply religion, something spiritual. However, our Vedic literatures and also the founder Acharya of our society has given us very clearly two, I would say, definitions or two levels or two features of dharma. They are, in Sanskrit, actually they are referred to as swadharma. Swadharma means what is more natural to us. We have two levels of swadharma. The spiritual level as the spirit soul, which means bhakti or devotional activities, and the material level. And the material level is what even, I would say, some of our devotees are possibly less familiar with. So I will beg to be excused because, you know, the original presentation covered like 84 hours, and when you try to squeeze 84 hours into four sessions, and now, you know, which I did actually in New Taliban, and I thought I was going to get 4 days here, but actually I have only three, so I have to squeeze that again, you know. from four sessions to three sessions, we'll do the best that we can. Actually, the subject matter naturally is a very serious subject matter, very important, very crucial, very essential, and very, I would say, timely. I mean, there's an urgent need to understand the basic concepts behind this, and then, of course, to put them into practice. So what I want to do is, although I have four sessions, I'm going to start today by covering, two or two and a half, then we'll see how things go. When I gave the course, actually, that was in Canada, in the province of Quebec, in the Laurentian Mountains, from April, actually, to last month, it covered like 14 weeks of, Saturday and Sunday, 3 hour sessions each. So we have like three sessions of 2 hours. Anyways, that's my challenge in trying to get across something very important within a relatively short period of time. So I will give immediately an overview of what will be covered in the next few days, and immediately then proceed to the the first and the second of the four. So this is the overview coming up here. 1 second. Now, naturally, when I gave the course, this was intermingled with... Whoops. What happened here? Yeah. I took it out. This was intermingled with the various videos, because we have, for those who may not know, actually in India, we have established the leadership in India. This should start in a few seconds. Has established a ministry. We have a ministry called Daiva Varnasram Ministry for Rural Development. And within this ministry, we are having various departments and the ministry is centered on Varnasram. Dharma is so important. And again, this is like an overview. This is especially going to help, this subject matter is going to help two things especially. To understand about, I would say, social organization, how society is meant to be organized, because that's very important in Vedic culture. And secondly, intimately connected with that is it will help us to get some insights about education and how to work or build what we call curriculum design. So these are two things we will, again, not go in that much of details, but we'll give hopefully the gist or the essence. Now, all of this is also taken from one very important verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam in the seventh canto. The seventh canto, the Bhagavatam, of course, all the cantos are important, but in the seventh canto, Srila Narada Muni, over five chapters, 11 to 15, speaks specifically about Vanasram. And in the first of these five chapters, chapter 11, which is entitled The Perfect Society for Social Divisions, this is one of the instructions he gives. And this course on Dharma Shastri, they say, I took the inspiration especially from this verse. So I'm giving the translation right now. Well, I'll give the verse. Dharma mulam hi bhagavan sarva veda mayo harihi smritam cha tadvidam rajan yena chatma prasidati. Both the verse and the purport are extremely important, because within the purport and the verse as well, we find these two levels or two features of dharma, you see, especially in the purport, I would say. Thank you very much. Wonderful. The translation: the Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles, and the memory of great authorities. O King Yudhisthira, this principle of religion is to be understood as evidence. On the basis of this religious principle, everything is satisfied, including one's mind, soul, and even one's body. So I won't get into a long explanation on this, otherwise it's going to end up in a Bhagavatam class, and we're going to miss the seminar. So if you want more details and information, kindly read the purport to this verse, okay? So the four sessions will be first introduction, which we'll do right after this, and the two main, or the gist of the whole seminar is in the second and the third session. One, Vanashrama Dharma, and two, Bhagavat Dharma. And then the last session is practical application, how to put into practice. So what I'll do is I'll skip, actually, because then I go into details about what I, because I'll go, I'm doing this a little more quickly, so I will get out of this presentation right now and go right into the introduction, and because this is the overview. So the introduction is basically some of this information. So as to avoid repeating, and of course I have repeated also the verse, because it's so important, but we won't read that again, of course. Now, the introduction is divided as follows. We're going to try to cover this evening, and we're going to try to go in the second session as well, which deals with Varnashrama Dharma. So we're going to be looking at terminology, Sanatan Dharma in two features, concepts of Sambandha, Abhidheya, and Prayojana. This course actually is dealing with some very, I would say, basic principles and concepts. And this, I would say, is extremely important. Unless we are very clear, and unless we understand basic principles and concepts that are there, I would say, very often hidden in the Vedic culture, then we will not be able to apply, let's say, the teachings that are given in the Vedic literatures. And when we do understand the concepts, the principles, then we, because situations vary all the time, all over the world, different countries have different climates, so many things, so many factors are there. If we know the basic concepts and principles, we'll be able to, isn't it, apply them according to desha kalapatra, time, place, and circumstance. Another thing is, yeah, it's dealing with the same thing, key principles. What are the references? You know, from where do I get the material? You know, is it just coming out? It's not coming out of here. it's really specific books of knowledge that are there actually in our Vedic literatures, and then supportive material, which is let's say different PowerPoints and documentaries or videos that we have within our ministry. We have like a national department just for producing documentaries, which is an important medium of communication. So terminology, again, because we have a mixed audience a little bit, we have some people who know a lot of these things, others who may know less. We'll try to do this as quickly as possible. It's not very difficult to follow. But these are important terms to understand. Dharma, Shastri, Varnashrama Dharma, Varnas, Ashramas, Bhagavad Dharma. Whoops, and Bhagavad Dharma. If we nicely, clearly understand these, then we can apply that knowledge. The definition of Dharma is given as follows. Something, well, sometimes it's translated as religion, something that is natural and eternal, the eternal function of the living entity. Some of this is taken actually from the folio. It's also sometimes, you know, in Sanskrit, as we know, there are terms, Sanskrit terms, which according to the context, the definition changes a little bit. Like Atma is another example. Or sometimes it refers to the inherent quality of something. So the word Dharma actually, Prabhupada explains as well, does not find an equivalent in English. There's no equivalent. And that's why I would say it's important for us to introduce it in the English language, you know, with the different explanations, some of which are on the board here. Shastri is simple enough. It's connected with Shastra, and it means somebody who has studied and who understands the different aspects and the different meanings and whatnot of, isn't it, Dharma. So that's why we gave the title, just like in ISKCON, we have Bhakti Shastri, people who study about the science of bhakti or devotion. So we wanted to concentrate on Dharma so that we have a balanced understanding of Dharma, and that's why we chose this word Shastri. So it's connected with Shastras, means revealed scriptures. Again, this is like very basic, very relatively simple. Dharma Shastri means somebody who, after studying and hearing and putting into practice as well, has realized the basic essential features of Dharma, isn't it? Now, Varnashrama Dharma, the eternal Dharma of the spirit soul when situated at the level of conditioned soul. All of us who are here in the material world, we are conditioned by this body. We are conditioned by what is called the modes of material nature. And therefore, this understanding of Varnashrama Dharma is for those living entities primarily who are in the material world, because in the spiritual world there's no need, because there are no modes of material nature. Okay. Now, we all know, those who are devotees, the four social and the four spiritual orders of society, and we won't spend very much time on that. But these are natural divisions of society, which can be found practically everywhere. And again, a little bit of repetition here is connected with the modes of material nature. It's connected with, therefore, the word prakriti is something very important we find in the Bhagavad Gita. Prakriti, as we know, out of the five principles that are explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, is an eternal principle. Because very often devotees will ask, is Varnashram eternal? Yes and no. Means that when we go back to the spiritual world, Varnashram is not necessary. But it is an eternal concept or an eternal system. And this is very important to understand, actually. It is Krishna's eternal system for the conditioned souls in the material world. In the same way that bhakti, bhakti is Krishna's eternal way by which we can exchange, isn't it? Eternally exchange in loving service with him. So similarly, on the bodily material platform, Krishna has created a system which is meant to be followed eternally because it deals with the modes of material nature and prakriti, and that is eternally present in the material world. We could talk about that a little bit later on, but it's just to underline the point that because sometimes, I'm sure some of you have heard, some devotees especially, they will say, well, now we practice bhakti, devotional service, we don't need, or varnashram is not so necessary and not so important, and anyways, it's not really internal, not really an eternal thing. But actually it is. I would say it is having the same eternal features, and also the scientific nature that is there in bhakti is also there in varnashrama dharma. We could come back to that possibly later on. So the four divisions of varna and ashrama within the material world are thus eternal and part of what we call sanatana dharma. Sanatana dharma, that's another thing. Sanatana means eternal. So sanatana dharma has these two features of varnashrama dharma and bhagavad dharma. So again, you know, for someone who's possibly new, that's a lot of terminology. A lot of new terminology, and wow, you know, like what is daiva now? You know, daiva varnashrama. Daiva is important, of course, because it gives that spiritual coding, that spiritual element. More precise than spiritual, actually, we should use the word devotional. Daiva varnashrama, when our acharyas speak about daiva varnashrama, they speak about bhakti, the element of bhakti, devotion. To Lord Krishna. So the varnas will go very quickly, just a brief overview. These are the comparison is often given, the social body and the material body. You know, the brahmanas like the head, the kshatriyas like the arms, vaishyas like the stomach, and shudras like the legs within society. So all of this is actually working in a most very, very scientific way. And it's important actually for those who are devotees to know how this is working. Ashramas, similarly, different stages of life. These are like the spiritual divisions of life. And it's divided in student life, householder life, retired life, and renounced life. Now just very briefly to Bhagavad Dharma. We'll get into more details as we introduce the subject matter. Bhagavad Dharma refers to the eternal dharma of the spirit soul when situated at the level of liberated soul. And that is referred to as bhakti, pure devotional service to the Lord. What is interesting is that this Bhagavad Dharma, although more easily, more naturally practiced in the spiritual world, one can also come to the platform of practicing Bhagavad Dharma within the material world as well. So we were referring to two levels of bhakti, or bhakti in its mixed form, which is referred to as sadhana, and in its pure form, which is referred to as, raganuga bhakti, pure devotional service. Again, you know, there are many aspects. Sanatana Dharma and two features. again, we're trying to compare these two levels of Varnashrama Dharma and Bhagavad Dharma. Varnashrama Dharma is very much on the material level for those in the material world, whereas Bhagavad Dharma is on the spiritual level. On the spiritual level, for both people in the spiritual world and also for those of us here in the material world. Varnashrama Dharma, yeah, I just explained this point, has to do with the body, whereas Bhagavad Dharma has to do with the soul. Just basic difference, let's say. Varnashrama Dharma is meant to bring us to what is called the mode of goodness, Sattaguna, whereas Bhagavad Dharma is meant to bring us beyond pure goodness, I mean beyond material goodness, to the level of pure goodness. And we mentioned briefly about Swadharma. There's material Swadharma and spiritual Swadharma. Today what is happening all over the world is that modern day leaders and people in general have no idea of the spiritual, of their spiritual Swadharma, and also have no idea of the material Swadharma. So we have a total mess, you know, in society. And what's happening within, let's say, our ISKCON society is that, of course, most devotees are quite familiar, have some information, knowledge about the spiritual Swadharma, but very often, and this is, a great deficit, something of deficiency, many of our own devotees are less acquainted with or knowledgeable about the material Swadharma. And therefore we have an imbalance. This creates a very major imbalance. We'll be coming back to this. Both are sciences, isn't it? One is the science of the varnas and ashramas, which are meant to lead us to the mode of goodness, social harmony as well, which will help us to actually practice spiritual life, whereas Bhagavad Dharma is the science of relationships, the science of exchanges, etc. Now, something very important, and I'm just giving a brief introduction, and of course, many of these things deserve a lot more attention, but Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced this whole concept, that is there actually in our Shastra, of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana Gyan, which means very briefly the science or knowledge of relationships, Sambandha, the science and knowledge of activities. Once we know our identity, for example, as spirit souls, we will begin to act on the platform of the spirit soul, and then Prayojana, what is the ultimate goal and objective. So both within, and this is probably the next, both within Varnashrama Dharma, we find these three, both within Varnashrama Dharma and Bhagavad Dharma. For example, in Varnashrama Dharma, Sambandha is understanding, for example, our Varna, which is meant to be done when one is before one reaches the age of 10, you see. So that's a whole, it's only those who are like brahmanas who can generally understand by looking at the activities. There are different ways actually to determine. Nowadays, of course, we don't even know most people about varna. and many of our devotees are also confused about, you know, what is my varna, Maharaj? You know, many devotees are sometimes confused. In the Vedic times, it was very important at a young age to understand, because, as Prabhupada mentioned, first is varna, then is ashrama. There, again, you know, there is an intimate link between varna and ashrama. So if one is a brahmana, for example, the four ashramas are open to him. If one is a kshatriya, only three of the ashrams are open to him. If one is a vaisha, only two of the ashrams are open. And if one is Shudra, only one ashram is open. So again, this is important information that will determine where we fit, so to speak, within society. This I'll go over quickly. Key principles that we find in both, let's say, the whole concept of Varnashrama Dharma and Bhagavad Dharma. In Varnashrama Dharma, on many occasions, Prabhupada referred to, you know, first is food. And actually the Vedic culture give a lot of importance to production of food because it is agrarian-based culture. Not only, I mean, for one, subsistence, and also it is directly connected with the mode of life which is being, let's say, advocated within the Vedic system. So again, this is something very important. Vedic culture, and most of us, even as devotees, we are not understanding. We don't know, or if we know, it's only very theoretical. We don't really believe, we don't understand that Vedic culture is primarily agrarian-based culture. Means where one is connected with land, with cows, where one is living in a localized way, producing one's own food, working within a you know, walking distance, so to speak, of one's dwelling, etc. And agriculture, naturally, within that setting, is considered as the basis for economy. It is the best economy. And those who were qualified kings of bygone days, even more recently in places like India, they understood the importance of developing, maintaining villages so that proper economy could be. And then some of these principles, produce only what you need. We were talking about that a few minutes ago. And use only what you produce. These are very very profound teachings, actually, and concepts which we should actually be endeavoring to apply. You know, what we need for maintaining ourselves and our immediate families, we should be producing ourselves. And whatever, it's just like we went to Old Vrindavan this afternoon, there's so much of fruit lying there. It's like we're not, for whatever different reasons. So in other words, Krishna is already giving so many things without our making such a big effort. We should be utilizing these things. Important concepts, and of course I mentioned this as well, land and cows, localized living. Many of these things are, you know, actually existing in the spiritual world. That's why we put this column in the spiritual world. land, cows, is very central, very important. Localized living, we mentioned. Yeah. And the goal, both within Varnashrama Dharma and Bhagavad Dharma, is actually self-realization, isn't it? And these are some of the references. It's far from being complete. We have extracted from these books, basically, and it is from these kind of books, these are all in our part of our Vedic literatures, that we can build up a curriculum. And that's where the whole idea of, what is it, Varnashram College, you know, comes in. These are the books from which we should actually be, so we'll be going in that a little bit in detail in a few seconds, because we're kind of ending this introduction presentation here. I will go immediately into what is called the Varnashrama Dharma session. And again, I apologize because I'm throwing a lot of material, I know, to you. And let's see. Yes. We hope to make some of this material more easily available so that devotees can see this subject matter is especially for what we call the dvijas in society. Let me explain that. This is, we've seen this already. Varnashrama Dharma, the slide speaks for itself. I was just going to speak about dvijas, I don't have to explain. Three areas that we're going to study here. One is that Varnashrama within our ISKCON society happens to be, one of four divisions or four movements that Prabhupada spoke about. Some of you have heard this before. For some of you, it may be new. We won't spend too much time. The second aspect is the role of dvijas, or what we call twice born. These are the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, and the vaishyas within society. That's something I see quite important. But the gist and the main presentation is the third one here, which is dealing with what is called char vidya. Char vidya, the four sciences. These four sciences we find reference to from what is called the Kautilya Arthashastra. It's part of our Vedic literatures. And that's the main presentation actually in this particular PowerPoint presentation. But first, it's good to know about number one and two. That means that Varnashrama Dharma is something that our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, spoke about, and that he put within a certain, frame, you know, to help us understand. And hopefully, we have a little chart here that can help us visualize about Varnashrama. A very important reference, because all of this explanation or understanding about movements, four movements, is in the essay on Gita Nagari, which many devotees, you know, I go to the, let me ask a question again. How many people know about or have read Gita Nagari? Okay, a few people. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Sometimes I go and, you know, there's not even one hand that goes up. I mean, I'm talking about devotees who have been in the movement for like years also. It can be understood in the sense that, you know, no book has been published. The essay Gita Nagari has not been published. And it is kind of hiding, so to speak, in the folio under compilations. No, not under compilations. Anyways, it's not so easy to find, but it is there, and this whole explanation is actually there. These are the four movements, the very words used by Srila Prabhupada in his 1956 essay, or rather magazine, Back to Godhead magazine. Prabhupada speaks of the Sankirtan movements in reference to the holy names and books. That is like, well, you'll see in the chart in a few seconds, that is like the core or the heart or the beginning of everything else, of everything that follows. Second is temple worship movement. Means establishing temples, installing deities. Third, spiritual initiation movement, connecting everyone in Guru Parampara. And four, classless society. Prabhupada was referring to Varnashram society, Daiva Varnashram. So, and this actually constitutes, this fourth one constitutes 50% of Prabhupada's. Yes? You have to ask Prabhupada, he's the one who used the word. Well, I'll explain that a little later on, okay? Yeah. Remind me in case I don't, but I will. I'll tell you later. Prabhupada was very naturally, you know, he used it for a particular purpose. I'll explain a little bit later. And these are the same things. Now, I'm going to show this in terms of graphically, to get another perspective from the essay on Gita Nagari compared to what we have within our ISKCON society. So, I'm using the same terminology, right? Sankirtan is the center. From the center comes temple worship, expands. From temple worship comes spiritual initiation, which means actually congregation. Because actually that's what we find on the right side. Within ISKCON, you can just look at it for like 15 seconds and you should be able to get it. but in other words, Srila Prabhupada has, within his ISKCON society, integrated these four divisions. And they are, if we look at them closely, they are interconnected, very very much interconnected. They make a whole. I mean, they constitute, it's like a full picture. And once you start dividing them or not developing all of them, then we have an incomplete mission. We have an incomplete, Srila Prabhupada's mission is not yet fulfilled, basically. Here's something interesting. All of you have heard about these four things, right? Mottos, books are the basis, purity is the force, preaching is the essence, utility is the principle. So if we analyze this closely, our four mottos within the ISKCON society, they're directly related, actually. You know, books is the first, books in Harinam, is from where we start. Purity means installing deities, worshipping the deities, having temples. One has to be pure, one has to be Brahmana. So, anyway, this is to give another perspective of these four divisions given by Srila Prabhupada. Now, a few things regarding dvijas. There are three mandatory activities for people who are what is called dvija. Dvija means who receive not the Brahman thread, but who receive? Who receive the sacred thread. Right. We are so accustomed in ISKCON that anyone who has one of these is a Brahmana. In the Vedic culture, if you have one of these, you may be a Brahmana, but not necessarily. You are either a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, or a Vaishya, isn't it? So, I used to think that there were, mandatory activities only for the Brahmanas, which I'm going to mention right now. But actually, these mandatory activities which follow are for all of these three individuals, which means that they're very important in society. They're all natural leaders in society. I'm talking about Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. What are the three mandatory activities? Mandatory means every day they have to do this. Otherwise, their quality of service will be affected, so to speak. The first one, naturally, is Patanya. The Sanskrit term means one should engage in personal study. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, every day they should be doing some study. Second one is Yajan, which means personal worship. The third is Dana, giving in charity. These are three basic activities. There are three additional activities, which I would say is especially for those who are advanced Brahmanas. They are not for Kshatriyas, and they are not for Vaishyas. They are only for Brahmanas. What are they? Teaching. Unless one has studied and become realized, then he will not be able to teach properly. So teaching is one of the important qualities, or activities rather, of Brahmanas, and then performing Jagyas as well. When one engages in teaching and performing Jagyas, often one will get Dakshina. And then Dakshina is only meant to be received also by Brahmanas. Kshatriyas don't receive Dakshina, should not accept Dakshina. Vaishya also, because Vaishya doesn't need to accept Dakshina, he knows how to make he knows how to make money. So there's a whole science here, actually, regarding, that's why in the Vedic culture, within the system of Varna and Ashrama, these three personalities are very, very important. And as Prabhupada explains, as we all know, where are the qualified Brahmanas, where are the qualified Kshatriyas, and nowadays basically we have Shudras. This is a little bit, you just look at the on the right hand side, these are the different professions. And this is a whole topic in itself, of course. Means we generally think of a Brahmana as somebody who's on the altar, or like this, or I mean as a priest. But in Vedic culture, brahmanas have many professions, which and many of which are completely outside of the temple. You know, so we've listed some of them here, like astrologer, architect, doctor, we call Kaviraj in India, one who's a Vastu consultant. These are all, you know, full-time professions which are meant to be taken up by brahmanas, qualified brahmanas. And when, within the context of what is called Varnasrama colleges, Srila Prabhupada wanted us to introduce these are standard sciences that are there in our Vedic, you know, Shastra. I just gave the reference briefly from Arthashastra. Very quickly, we'll do the same for Kshatriyas. Again, looking just on the right-hand side for the different professions. Naturally, when we think of Kshatriya, we think of kings or monarchs, but judges, lawyers, counselors, people in the military, people in administration, these are all duties and responsibilities of Kshatriyas. And the three main, in the center, as you can see, the three main areas of activity are protection, administration, and welfare. That's a whole science in itself, actually. Again, this is from Arthashastra. Vaishya, because I want to get to the main one hasn't come yet, the main, let's say, gist of this presentation. Vaishyas, interesting, basically two professions. Krishi, Goraksha, means agriculture and protection of cows, which is people who are having land. And then Vanijam, from Bhagavad Gita, trade based on agriculture and cow protection. Mm. These are the duties of Vaishyas. And it's very interesting how from the seventh canto also, Narada Muni gives us nine qualities for Shudras. Shudras, if we don't have qualified Shudras, even though we may have a different other persons, qualified Shudras are necessary to, because they will give assistance, you know, to the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, and the Vaishyas. These are the nine qualities listed. Obedience to the twice born, cleanliness, service to the master, honesty, not chanting mantras except the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, no stealing, etc. So in other words, it's a Shudra is a very important member of the Varnashrama system. Now we get to the main presentation of this PowerPoint, Charvidya. Now kindly follow this attentively. The first of the four sciences, and this is giving general basic understanding, it's actually, we call metaphysics, you know, basic philosophy. It is meant to influence and it is connected with the other three sciences that are coming up. The second of the sciences is described as the science of the Vedas, Vedic knowledge. And Vedic knowledge is especially meant to be the specialization of brahmanas. Those who are brahmanas, they will spend hours and hours, isn't it, in studying, and then they will be spending hours and hours in teaching also. That's the domain of brahmanas. So that is the second of the Charvidya. Third is Rajniti, means the science of politics, the science of governance. How to administer, how to protect, isn't it? The three things we mentioned earlier, protection, administration, welfare. These are the three main areas for Kshatriyas. And that is a science in itself. The whole Arthashastra actually is especially written for those who will take up the responsibility of Kshatriya. And the fourth science is Arthaniti or economics. Mm. again, something very important. And in this way we can see that these, the three sciences that come after philosophy, are directed towards the Brahmana, the Kshatriya, and the Vaishya. So in this way we get a bit of a sense of what, you know, how the Vedic teachings are presented and to whom they are directed. And this is a nice quote actually from the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Prabhupada mentions that in human society, therefore, the Brahminical culture, the Kshatriya culture, and the Vaishya culture must be maintained, and people must be taught how to be satisfied with only what they need. So two very major themes. One is that these three individuals within society, there's a whole culture, there's a whole science in terms of what they should be doing, and there's a whole training as well. One thing. Secondly, is that in the Vedic culture, we learn to live to be satisfied with the minimum. Not as in modern society, that we are striving for the maximum. Isn't it? And therefore there's all this undue competition that is there. Just a few things regarding why philosophy, which we call metaphysics, from the Kautilya Arthashastra. Philosophy, I'm just quoting directly from this book, confers benefit on the people, number one. Number two, it keeps the mind steady in adversity. If someone has a good philosophical understanding, he will have these benefits, so to speak. It brings proficiency in thought, speech, and action. You know, these are all desirable qualities that we all could use. Philosophy studies the strength and weakness of Vedic lore, means of the Vedas, of the science of economy and the science of politics. It is a lamp, described as a lamp of all sciences, and the means of all actions, and the support of all laws and duties. Means philosophy is important. Isn't it? No philosophy, we miss out on all of this. And nowadays, you know, how much of philosophy do they teach at the universities? I mean, like in technical, most of what is taught today is Prabhupada, as we know as well, is like on the technological side. Practically no philosophy. Previously, when one would study, go to higher studies, higher education, one would study what is called the humanities, isn't it? Humanities, literatures, history, and philosophy as well. One would study about life, human life, psychology. All these are considered as humanities. Nowadays, this has become less important. And philosophy is divided in the following three areas. Philosophy means studying Sankhya, specifically Sankhya, as we find actually in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where one analyzes the whole material world and its 24 elements, and of course with the spirit soul. So that is actually the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Second science, or second level, is in terms of yoga, because that's also important. Various levels of yoga, which culminate ultimately in bhakti yoga. And the third one is in terms of nyaya shastra, how to debate, how to deal, how to, things that have to do with logic, perception, and this is something that is generally taught in the Gurukul in the early, well, not in the early, at some particular point. Now, this gets a little bit interesting here in terms of the Vedas. So, we started off with philosophy, now into the Vedas. Vedas actually Its purpose is to investigate what is spiritual good and what is evil. To understand, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? one should know the difference between what is to be done, what is not to be done. Pravritti marga and nivritti marga. Pravrittim cha, nivrittim cha, janana vidur asura. Those who don't know, they develop asuric mentality. There are what is called chaturvasa vidya. Chaturdasa vidya means 14 books of knowledge. Prabhupada makes mention of that in one purport of the Bhagavad Gita. 14 books of knowledge. These are the standard books of knowledge that one learns when one goes to Gurukul, for example. These are what they are or have introduced, for example, in Mayapur. You know, the Gurukul in Mayapur. What are these 14 books of knowledge? Well, they're given as follows. Actually, the reference is from this verse, which is given by Baladev Vidyabhushan. Angani Vedas Chadvaro Mimamsa Nyaya Vistaraha Dharma Shastra Puranascha Vidya Hyetas Chaturdasa. 14 books of knowledge. First one, the Vedic literatures, four Vedas, isn't it? The four Vedas that we all know, original Vedas as given by Lord Krishna to Lord Brahma. And then what is called the Vedangas, which are basics and which help us actually understand. There are six Vedangas. We'll enumerate them in a few seconds. And then what is called Mimamsa, which is Vedanta Sutra, Nyaya, books of logic, Dharma Shastras. Prabhupada explains actually there are 20 books of Dharma Shastras, and Puranas. So all together, this makes four. These are the 14 books of knowledge. there are four additional books of knowledge, actually, and I'm just mentioning them here. They are called Upavedas, and the first is in relation to medicine, Ayurveda, Gandharva Veda, Dhanurveda, and Sthapatya Veda, architecture, Vastu. So actually in total it makes 14 plus 4, actually 18. This is the subject matter of study for traditionally. And Srila Prabhupada, when he instructs that you should study my books, or, you know, devotees were asking, what should we teach our children? Isn't it? Prabhupada would say, well, you know, we have books, you can use my books. And of course, Srila Prabhupada meant books in relation to his books. That means his books are all taken from this source, actually. And Srila Prabhupada made it very clear also that this, when we live the more natural, simplified life, following the principles of both Bhagavad Dharma and Varnashrama Dharma, these books are sufficient. All material knowledge, all spiritual knowledge is actually contained within these books to keep us satisfied, happy, and to meet our various necessities of life, both on the bodily platform as well as the mental platform and spiritual platform. So I won't spend very much time on this, but these are the four Vedas we all know: Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajur Veda, Atharva Veda, and then the six Vedangas we know less of unless we have gone to Gurukul. They are called Siksha, Chandas, Vyakarana, Grammar. Nirukta, these are all, I guess you would call them basics where one learns, the first thing one learns is the alphabet, and then there's all rules of grammar, etc., because the traditional books of knowledge are all in Sanskrit.
What's the last one?
That has to do with writing of prosody, writing of, like, if you write poetry, you can either write it in prose or drama or poetry. Yeah, there are different ways to write, which have, you write by meters, you write by, just like the verses we are trying to read in the morning.
The words have a certain symbol.
Yeah, means it's, there's a way of doing everything in the Vedic culture, and especially in terms of writing. And we know, for example, that there's, if you write a poem, there are rules to follow, and the timing, etc., like that, as opposed to, let's say, prose, just ordinary. Yeah. So there's all kinds of rules, actually, which are taught, and then one becomes, in this way, qualified to write certain things, or even to explain certain things. Yes?
Where does the hermeneutics go? Would that fit into, like, grammar, or...?
No, grammar is grammar.
Or, like, something like hermeneutics, or, you know, it's just...
Yeah. He's asking where does...
Hermeneutics or epistemology, you know, something like that,
fit into this? Well, I've never taken these subjects myself,
okay.
And so I can't answer you very much into detail. I suppose someone who has a direct experience of it would be able to answer you more more clearly on this one. So this is basically giving an overview of. Then the other few remaining are Mimamsa. Which is actually Vedanta Sutra, and the natural commentary of that is Srimad Bhagavatam. Nyaya, various books of knowledge, various books of logic. And the Dharma Shastras, I've mentioned a few of them here. Oops, that was close. this Artha Shastra and others are standard, you could say, books that deal with, especially. For those of us who are here in the material world, how to deal with governance, how to deal with economics, etc., like that. Various material sciences, actually, which are outlined in the Dharma Shastras, and then the Puranas. So it's a lot of material, actually, and that is why normally one would spend many years. The most important of all the Puranas, 18 Puranas, is of course the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the science of politics, we all already covered that very briefly. I mean, there's a whole book on it that goes very much into detail. And these are the three main areas that is meant to be covered by people who are taking up. And then again, this we also covered briefly. The science of agriculture, crop protection, and trade, like that. this is giving a brief overview of on Varnashrama Dharma, and it might be good to take some questions. Tomorrow, actually, we'll cover the other. The other two aspects, and what's important to see is actually the link or the connection between what we call Varnashrama Dharma. We got a bit of an overview of that this evening, in connection with Bhagavad Dharma. And just keeping in mind that Bhagavad Dharma is in many ways even more intricate, in that it goes into what is called the science of tattva. Not an easy subject matter, actually, tattva. The master of tattvas, the personality who was very knowledgeable about tattvas in our sampradaya, actually was Srila Jiva Goswami. He wrote his Satsang Dharmas, which deal a lot with tattvas. Tattva means truth, absolute truth, actually. And that obviously is of great importance. As we'll see tomorrow, the tattvas begin. We can find the beginning of tattva explanation in books like the Bhagavad Gita, then again Srimad Bhagavatam, Dasamuru Tattva, etc. Maybe it's a good time to come back to the question you were asking, or to take maybe any other question that might be there. Later on we'll try to go from largely what is being presented here as theory to application, how to apply this understanding, how to apply this knowledge, both of Bhagavat, Dharma, and also, let's see, Bhagavat, Varnashrama Dharma, and Bhagavat Dharma. Your question again? Okay, a good question that helps us to understand. Well, let's take a number 1,000, because there's a very very less percentage, maybe like, I would say less than 1% Brahmanas.
1,000.
Less than 1%. If you take 1,000, then you have. Yeah, if you have 100, less than 1, so if you take 1,000, you have at least a couple. Less than 1%. And there's a reference, actually, which I have not traced down yet, which does give some kind of figure in terms of what percentage of a given population or community are in the category of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaisyas, and Shudras. Let's say that the vast majority, when I speak of vast majority here, I speak of like over 80% or 90%. Definitely over 80% are within the category of Shudra. Shudra.
Yeah, are you talking about in a Vedic society or an Arab society?
In any society.
Any society?
Yes. Yes. For Shudras. Yeah, two of the, there are four qualities that make up what we call the pillars, pillars of Dharma, isn't it? Satyam, Daya, Tapas, Ucham. Two of those are actually meant to be developed by Shudras as well. Satyam, truthfulness, and Socham, cleanliness. They're mentioned, They're mentioned in those nine qualities that we put up. You see, even in the most ideal of situations where we have good shudras who are following, who are developing these qualities, they remain shudras and they remain the majority within a population. Now we have that's more or less the same percentage but of people who are not following, you know, they're like, we could say, unqualified Shudras. Of course, in Kali Yuga, as we know, why is it that in Kali Yuga, majority of people are referred to, isn't it, Kalo Shudra Sambhava? Because according to the Vedic teachings, one will be accepted or recognized as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya only if he can demonstrate that for seven generations, the family for generations have performed all the samskaras. We're not even doing it for one generation. But, they have records in India. You go to some of the old temples, isn't it? They'll ask you, what is your gotra? And so higher families, higher castes, we say, they have record. And that's why when marriage comes around, sometimes they'll take like 2 or 3 years to shop around, so to speak, to find out. And what they do is they look at the history and whether people have, especially we're talking about, let's say, Brahmanas or any of the three orders, any of the three higher orders or dvijas, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they will have record actually of their lineage. And if for seven generations you don't have record, you're Shudra. So in Kali Yuga, Kali Shudra Sambhava, we don't have records. Yes?
Yeah, I mean, this takes us back to that. How about describing this? The classless concept.
Okay.
This whole thing is extremely touchy, delicate in many ways, because I mean, we see ourselves in a moment of glory, being classless. We don't want to be put in a moment of glory. We've got away from that. We've got feudalism and whatever the hell, Europe and kings. And, I mean, the idea that this is sort of submerging, this is being desirable, and we should go back to something. Who would produce it?
This is the classical this is a classical argument and question which comes naturally, and it is a good question, obviously, because in most people's mind and way of thinking, that's we've left all of that, why do you want to go back to all of this and etc. like that. So Srila Prabhupada, when he speaks about classless society, and let's try to follow this carefully. Srila Prabhupada was so convinced that this system that we sometimes refer to as the caste system of varnas and ashramas, because that it is a caste system, it is unfortunately like the word shudra, the word caste has taken a very bad name, has been given a bad name. Prabhupada calls it, the vitiated, adulterated caste system. Srila Prabhupada spoke of classless society, and in the same breath, he expected that if one has the proper understanding, one will be able to accept the concept of classless society and introduce the four orders, the four social orders, and the four spiritual orders. Why? Let me explain. Because when Srila Prabhupada speaks of classless society, in the context of four varnas and four ashramas, this will help us to understand also, Prabhupada used the example of a drama. Now all of us, in five minutes, we're all going to go on the stage, and you're going to play the role of a king, and you're going to play the role of a businessman, etc. We're all going to play a role. But we all know, once we will be on that stage, that we're not really that king, even though we may convince the audience that, I'm playing my role really good. So the idea is that externally, because we are here in the material world, and we cannot avoid the fact that we are influenced by the modes of material nature. Means, because we are influenced by the modes of material nature, we fall, whether we like it or not, we fall within one of these categories. Granted, nowadays it's a lot more mixed because things have not been followed, but the fact remains that we cannot do away with the modes of material nature in the material world. They're there. And our birth and as we develop our character, our nature, are all molded based on the gunas, or the modes of material nature. The fortunate thing is that if we come in contact with this knowledge, we can voluntarily accept to play one of these roles in these different categories, but and that is where the term classless society comes in. Those who are in knowledge of their spiritual identity, they will accept to play this role, but they will all understand that everyone in all of these four social orders and four spiritual orders of varnas and asramas, they're all servants of God. They're all devotees of the Lord. In that sense, it is classless. Understand? So if the spiritual dimension is not there, we will never be able to accept going back, so to speak, into these, you know, divisions of varnas and asramas. We will consider that as primitive, you know, we will consider village life as primitive as well, etc. We fail to understand, because generally most people don't have the spiritual dimension or spiritual knowledge, we fail to understand that this is an extremely scientific system. It is it is scientific because it's given by Krishna. It has been molded, it has been established based on the laws of nature, you see. When we begin to have this understanding more clearly, then we can move forward, so to speak. And Srila Prabhupada has been emphatic, you know, in stating that no matter what social order you try to introduce, if it's not going to be based on these four varnas and asramas, it will fail. We look at the whole history in Kali Yuga. Meantime, we look at the kind of societies that were developed. We read from our Srimad Bhagavatam. These are not just made up stories, isn't it? During the time of Prithu Maharaj, during the time of you know, great personalities who were monarchs, very well versed in this science of Bhagavad Dharma and Varnashrama Dharma. They knew how to blend these two levels of Dharma and how to engage everyone. The problem has come, and it's been around for a long time, when in Kali Yuga, this is the symptom of Kali Yuga actually, people in some of these higher positions of Brahmanas and Kshatriyas especially, began to abuse or misuse the system. That's why Lord Buddha rejected the whole thing. That's why Lord Buddha rejected all the Vedas, actually, and introduced his Ahimsa philosophy, Ahimsa Dharma. So Dharma, the science of Dharma, on these two levels, once again, is like intricate, and one, you know, we need to give some time to actually understand in depth, I would say, the significance of both of these. And as I mentioned earlier, yeah, one small second. As I mentioned earlier, nowadays, definitely those who are not having this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, those who are not exposed to this knowledge of the Vedic culture, Vedic teachings, they're missing out on both of these levels. They have no knowledge about the spiritual dimension of life, number one. And they also have no knowledge about what is the best way to manage, to organize society, etc. Please. I have another question. I have another short and kind of question.
Since this is Kali Yuga, I mean, isn't this something that makes sense in terms of trying to extend the time? I remember King Kadira trying to hold back the time. I mean, why don't you just say Kali Yuga right this course? It's going to fix itself anyway.
This is childish mentality. Just because you've fallen in the river, you just let somebody go and drown.
It's the same thing that the Christians have done about creating offense, where they say, well, why polish the brass and say you should? It's all going to hell in a handbasket anyway. What does it matter?
Yeah. So the idea is that we need to hear what our what we call our acharyas, our teachers, are telling us, isn't it? The success in life for one who is practicing spiritual life is to actually understand what is there in the Shastra, number one, and also what is being explained by those who know, you know, in depth the knowledge which is given. I'm talking about, let's say, acharyas or gurus, spiritual masters. And, you know, the founder acharya of our society was one such personality, and he wanted and instructed, keeping in line with his own teacher and other acharyas, that we introduce these principles of dharma in terms of varnashrama dharma. The whole mission, you know, that is the beginning in the Bhagavad Gita as well, you know. Yada yada hi dharmasya glaniya bhavati bharata. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that I come in this material world, you know, dharma samstapanartanam, you know, to re-establish the principles of dharma. Because we are failing to understand, even like on a material level, we fail in a very horrible way today, especially people who have no knowledge of spirituality, we fail in a horrible way to understand these principles that we briefly presented regarding Varnashrama Dharma, which have to do with how to deal with the material world, the material energy, etc. We all know how we are so badly, for example, abusing, isn't it, material nature. We are manipulating. We are making a mess of the whole planet in so many ways, because we're acting foolishly, like less than children, actually. So we are we are not acting in knowledge. And we are destroying ourselves, our own lives. We're destroying the whole ecosystem in which we're living, and the whole world is in a very, very dangerous and precarious situation, as we all know, you know, on all levels. Why? Because we're not knowing about these principles. You know, for example, let's just take economic, you know. Every country is very much interested in economy. As a matter of fact, the number one goal and objective for any country is economic development. But they're doing it the wrong way. You know? What is economy? What is actual economy according to Shastra? Actual economy is three things. Krishi, Guraksha, Vanijam. Agriculture. Protection of cows. And trade based on agriculture and protection of cows. Economy is not as we are doing now in all the countries of the world, you know, more and more factory and industry, what we call, what's it called?
Extraction.
So the idea is that we have failed, especially in modern day society. We have deviated actually from some established norms, some established principles, and therefore it is so important, so essential to come back to basics. To a large extent, what we try to present this evening are basics. Both in terms of material well-being, and also basics. We'll get into more of that tomorrow on the spiritual platform or level, one second, when we will speak about tattva. So we should not be callous, you know, actually we should be, that should be part of a genuine concern. We should be concerned about our fellow men. We should be concerned about our children. We should be considered a concern about nature. And if we can do something, and actually we can, to protect nature in different ways, to protect people who are on this planet. And if we are actually in knowledge, what is the purpose of life, isn't it? Is to actually become situated in clear understanding of what life is about. You know, it's actually self-realization. So there's so many very clear explanations whereby Srila Prabhupada, for example, and other acharyas explain that unless there is brahminical culture in society, then the goal of life cannot be achieved. And brahminical culture is intimately connected with land and cows, protection of cows, living in a localized manner. So we have thrown this out the window in modern day society, isn't it? We're into, anyways, we won't go into details, but we have totally deviated from the norm. And therefore we are experiencing this kind of crisis situation all over the world. Yes, I'll come back on this side. Very good question. And Srila Prabhupada had the answer also. Prabhupada wanted that we have a very thorough, clear understanding of what these basic principles are, and we should put them into practice. So how to do that, actually that's part of the presentation. How to put into practice, let's say, for our own city temples, for our rural communities, for ourselves individually, etc. So we give some guidelines on that, but the essence of all of that is that, number one, we need to understand, you know, there's that very important verse also in the Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, Asradhadhana Purusha Dharma Sesya Parantapa, you know. Sraddha. Sraddha means firm faith, in the words of the acharyas. And Asradha means not so firm faith, actually not believing, not being convinced. So we must first understand and become convinced in the words of Shastra, in the words of Guru. And then we must take the necessary steps to understand the principles that are there. And okay, we have attempted and maybe failed in various areas. Not maybe, we have. And so then let's look at that and let's see how this can be corrected. And the same formula actually remains. You know, the same instructions are there. So those same instructions, the more we become convinced, the more we accept them, the more we become clear, and the more we become also qualified, isn't it? Because the element of qualification is also important, both in terms of material qualification and also spiritual qualification. Then we will be more easily able to put into practice, isn't it? So we see in some places, for example, in the context of Varnasram, that in some places actually our devotees, okay, it's not happening on a large scale, but in some places they're meeting with some success, isn't it? So it's a question of actually following in this way, I would say, and including here in North America as well, which naturally North America compared to places like India presents special challenges, but we all know that Srila Prabhupada had great expectations, and he told us, isn't it, that you can introduce this anywhere in the world, including, and actually foremost, Srila Prabhupada wanted that we introduce this here in North America, so that it can become an inspiration for others and whatnot. Briefly. Back here, yes.
Maharaj, see if I understand correctly that. So, following Chaitanya Lila, you see that Chaitanya and his associates were, the goal was to save all of human society.
Yes.
To see everyone go back to Godhead.
Yes.
And if I understand what you're saying then, that by engaging in this process of Arnashram Dharma, that this actually connects us in that personal and the personalism of bhakti yoga by wanting to save all society rather than, you know, the comments we heard of, hey, it's all going to hell in a handbasket, why not let it go? That would seem impersonal, you know, compared to what we want to do is connect to Krishna on a personal, intimate, loving level in that. So what we're espousing is that by connecting to Varnashram Dharma, we're actually fulfilling the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and helping to save society. Am I understanding correctly?
Yes, it is. This evening we basically have focused on Varnashrama Dharma. Tomorrow we're going to speak about Bhagavad Dharma, which is more in line with a lot of, let's say, the science of spirituality or the science of bhakti, etc., like this. And the two are actually meant to be interconnected. So definitely, what I'm saying in this presentation is that our acharyas and Prabhupada, at one point he mentioned, you know, Lord Chaitanya, he also followed Varnashrama Dharma. Sannyas is one of the, you know, ashramas. He could have just neglected it if he felt that. So Prabhupada mentioned that even Lord Chaitanya accepted. And we should remember, for example, that 500 years ago when Lord Chaitanya appeared, I mean, we didn't have the kind of modernization and industrialization as we have today, you know. The vast majority of people in India were still living in the villages, and Varnashram was, you know, at least externally kind of like going on. Major changes have occurred, and since Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that's when our acharyas started to speak even, let's say, more strongly about the need to actually, hey, you know, we are deviating now, you know, so much. So yes, the whole system of Varna and Ashrama in the context of Daiva Varnashrama means performing all those activities are meant to actually help us become devotees, because the whole system of Varnashrama is geared towards helping individuals move towards at least the mode of goodness, isn't it? And it is when one is situated in the mode of goodness that one can actually go beyond the mode of goodness. So even those, for example, who are Shudras, when we say ignorant, we should not misunderstand, you know, because it really has a negative, you know, bad connotation, the word Shudra, like the word Varnashram, actually. It's hard to even use the word sometimes. But when we say mode of ignorance, it doesn't mean that, you know, the guy is like good for nothing and he's just like a fool. Ignorance means one is having less of an ability to maybe spend hours and hours as a brahmana would do, you know, studying. But even someone who's of Shudra mentality, that's the beauty of Varnashram, because he will be serving nicely. And actually that's one of the basic teachings that we find in the Vaishnav philosophy. We are all servants, you know. We're all dependents on God, on Krishna. So, in other words, we're all Shudra in that sense. And it's just that within the social framework, Shudras, by associating with the twice born, isn't it? By associating and serving people who are qualified brahmanas, qualified kshatriyas, qualified shudras, they will advance. They will make spiritual advancement. So therefore, this so-called material arrangement or material system will help us more than anything. More than anything means more than any other material arrangement or system to progress and advance in spiritual life. Yes. Okay. Yeah. She had her hand up for some time.
About the sugars.
Yeah.
Since as we said, such a bad connotation.
Yes.
But the reality is that most of us are sugars or less.
Yes.
But then we establish the Varnashram system, so we need to accept that we are sugars or less. So kind of we need to understand, because on the other level, as Baba Bhun should say, it's actually quite, you know, it's not bad to be sugar.
Yeah, it's very,
actually,
yeah.
It's actually a very good position. So what's your perspective to establish the word sugar in a better,
yeah.
You know, because it needs to be.
Just to support what you're saying, 200 years ago, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur discovered like the Bhagavatam, at that time the social situation was such that Vaishnavism was very looked down upon. It was not, people in the name of Vaishnavism were doing all kinds of nonsense. It was very unpopular. What did Bhaktivinoda Thakur do? He didn't just, not use the word Vaishnava, rather he, through his preaching, he demonstrated that actually Vaishnavas are of the highest order, you see. So in a similar way, you know, Varnashram is having a very bad connotation nowadays, the word Shudra as well. So now, as you rightly point out, we need, through preaching and through example, demonstrate how, for example, to be member at any level of the system of Varna and Ashrama, one is considered civilized. So if you're a Shudra, you're civilized. If you're less, you're not civilized. You know?
Subhuman.
Yeah, you become human. Or you're subhuman, yeah, if you're not, correct. So as we read a few minutes ago, there are 9 qualities. It is not an easy thing to be a good Shudra. It's not an easy thing to be a good Shudra. So, we have to kind of change our perspective it's actually, for most of us, it's actually not at all easy. It's not easy for devotees, what to speak of people who don't have this knowledge or understanding, because it requires, you know, what we call a paradigm shift. It actually requires a paradigm shift. We are so heavily conditioned in the way we're living in modern day society, so disconnected with the land, so disconnected with cows, so disconnected with this more natural lifestyle, that and all kinds of propaganda is there as well, to make us believe that, well, you know, don't go back to this way of living. It is all kinds of negative comments will be there. But once we understand more thoroughly, once we become more convinced that this is actually the norm, this is very important, this is how we should live. You know, just like those of us who have become devotees, we know very well that, again, to become karmi is not really a good thing. You know? to be a devotee, even though it is not always easy to practice as a devotee, it is better to remain with devotees, it is better to remain practicing like that. So in a very similar way, once we actually begin to understand about this lifestyle, this culture, and see, Varnashram is a culture, Varnashram is a lifestyle, and it happens to be the norm in a culture that Krishna has created and that he desires, and that will best help us achieve, you know, the goal of life, which is self-realization. Your hands both came at the same time, so I don't know what to do. you're closest.
I mean, you know, it's generally recognized that the current situation is dire. I mean, especially with the environmental degradation all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Climate change and everything else. Yeah, I mean, there's few people arguing against these issues in Colombia. Okay, but this proposal, it seems to be such an incredibly radical. I mean, it's like completely turning society upside down.
Yes,
and
society needs to be turned upside down. You know? Going back to the spiritual world means turning ourselves upside down. You know, becoming, you know, starting to understand we're not this body. That's not an easy thing. Not an easy thing. No, but it can happen. It can happen very quickly. Yeah. Here, and then coming back here.
You were giving the example of Buddha.
Yeah.
I had the experience of teaching in Malaysia. A very large Buddhist element in that society.
Yes.
Also a large Hindu. And so I had to study in order to understand how to position the role of Krishna consciousness in the phenomenon of Buddhist culture. I wanted to study.
Right.
A lot. study the pastime of Lord Buddha, when he came to this point of enlightenment, after sitting and meditating and going through all these tests and rigors and all that, he actually decided to act. Even though he's presenting this philosophy of everything is nothing, nothing is everything, but he actually decided to act because a voice came to him and said, out of compassion, you should spread Dharma. Mm-hmm. So, of course, from a devotee point of view, I understand who that was guiding him, because he was, in this case, a Shakti or a Shalika. But, to kind of go ahead and question for a minute, what you're presenting here is something that's so deductive in its nature. In other words, knowledge coming from a perfect source and in categories and subcategories of information to understand how to do everything in the material world. Yet we're living in a culture in which that has been rejected.
Mm.
Authority in Kali Yuga means, the nature of Kali Yuga is reject authority, not philosophically inclined. So how do you balance the introduction of that kind of information, which we say is deductive, coming from perfect source, perfect information, when in fact you're living in an environment where that very idea is rejected, people are not philosophically inclined, and then how does that fit into Varna before Ashram? In other words, how do we kind of balance that? In other words, the information is needed, because without it, you don't have philosophy.
Right.
But the population we're dealing with, in fact, is not interested. They want economic development, and they don't have the patience, the time to hear anything that takes intelligence to listen to and to let's speak and follow.
Yeah. Well, simultaneously, as we present the philosophy, so to speak, we need to also make the observation that the way we are living presently in modern day society and the various systems we have tried to introduce have led us to where we are today. So I haven't really touched on this aspect of because that is generally quite well known pretty well to everyone, how we are economically and politically and educationally experiencing various crisis situations. I mean the whole practically all the areas or facets of life are in crisis situation at present. So our approach is that, well, okay, this may seem very radical, if one actually, at least theoretically, accepts it or makes an experiment with it, one should not reject something without without at least making some experiment or trying it. So, probably the most forceful argument, I suppose, which would help to convince individuals is the one that Srila Prabhupada gave, which means that by demonstrating practical examples of all of this, then we can begin to convince others. I agree with you that because of the mentality that has developed in most people in modern day society, which because of various abuses that were there in previous systems, like nowadays, we try to speak about monarchy. Here in the United States of America or in North America, if we try to promote monarchy, well, we're not speaking to the right audience, isn't it? I mean, we're living in the world of democracy. So we have to, it was not obvious in the very beginning also when Srila Prabhupada came to the West and introduced, for example, the four principles of, the four principles of Dharma, the four rules and regulations, only a handful of people actually were able to take that up. So Prabhupada, that's another point as well. You know, Prabhupada used to say that we're interested in creating moons. You know, what's the use of having so many stars? So Prabhupada was wanting to, he mentioned as well, I mean, the information, we have an obligation to present it and give it to as many people as possible, but we already know that probably very few will take. And Prabhupada did admit that actually even if a small percentage of people do take it and put it into practice, that in itself will be powerful enough to actually bring about the changes that are needed. So we know from personal experience also that, you know, even we speak about basic teachings which are there in the Bhagavad Gita, it is not so easy for most people to immediately accept those, you know. So I guess there's a combination of, well, we have to remain honest and truthful in terms of presenting things as they are, you know, Bhagavad Gita as it is kind of thing. And at the same time, well, depending on the audience and, you know, to whom we are preaching, then we cannot change the philosophy, but we can present it possibly in ways that will be maybe more easy to accept or more appealing and whatnot.
Can I just add to what you're saying? Because this is relevant to my question. I'm sorry if I'm skipping over you, but when it comes down to it, this is the way I see it. I'm a neophyte to Krishna consciousness,
yes.
So please excuse me if I create any offense.
Yeah.
It comes down to integrity. Do our actions, words, and beliefs line up?
Right.
And if we expect to change the world and bring people to God, it's got to be through personal transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Because personal leads to organizational with regards to a community, and that leads to societal.
Right.
So at the end of the day, in a nutshell, I mean, just breaking it down into simplicity, we've got to, transformation is an inward-out process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we've got to break it down and just, our actions, words, and beliefs have to line up personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good
and
point.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Right. It's a good point. I don't think anyone will argue with that. Mm-hmm. Here, yes.
Reflecting, a few points I want to reflect on. One, Buck Charles, he was saying that you want to turn the whole society upside down. But actually, part of the problem is the perception. Most people have taken the reflection as the reality. Society is actually upside down. And sure, Prabhupada is presenting us the method to actually put it right side up.
Nice point.
Like the reflection of the tree in the water. People are taking the reflection as the actual substance. They're taking the material world as the actual substance, whereas it is simply the
reflection. Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
Also, I wanted to ask you about the 14 books of knowledge. You said that in a group will they study them.
Yeah.
That's a tremendous volume of knowledge and information. Do they study all of them? Do they just do an overview? Do they get in depth in all of them?
Well, it's practically, you want to comment on that?
I did a survey on Gurukuls for about a year and a half when Maharaj was doing the thesis.
Gurukul meaning what? Existing
traditional
Gurukuls.
Traditional. And the curriculum goes like this. For the first 4 years, they learn the basic Sanskrit. Upayukta mantra means as soon as you get up, you look at your hands, what mantras you chant. When you walk, when you keep your feet on the earth, you pray to Mother Bhumi. Then daily mantras for worshipping, Ganesha, then Krishna, you know, all those mantras. So first 4 years, they study these common things, brahmacharya, they don't walk without, they don't wear shoes. They learn all the basics, you know, cleaning their thing, keeping the dog clean. So 4 years are like that. After that, they are given a choice to learn grammar or to learn something else or learn, you know, other aspects. So 4 years, they learn all the basics, then they begin to specialize. That specialization goes for 8 years. After that, then mostly 12 years, by the time it's like if 100 people join in a year, first 4 years, everybody goes through it. Then 20% drop out. We are okay with this. they go back to their family trail. Then the rest 80% to up to 8 years, there is one graduation at 4 years, another graduation at another 4 years. By the time they finish 12 years, only the top Brahminical ones, 30% of them, they survive. But out of them, 10% continue even after that and finish 16 years of study. So that's the traditional system.
He's probably raised in the pastime of Nimai Pandit and Kishore Kashmiri, that the study of grammar that takes 13 years,
yep,
that in itself, is, but once you master that, then all of it is really open.
And that was when people were more intelligent 500 years ago.
It takes twice as long. In that regard, when we study the past tense of Lord Chaitanya, I just heard Prabhupada explain this on tape, these kind of topics you would only discuss, especially Bhagavad Dharma, the higher intimacies of relationship with Krishna, only with a very select few. And for the general masses, it was Harinam Kirtan, Prashadam distribution.
Yes.
Like that. So, as we tomorrow and the next day talk about the implementation stage, especially as it relates to farming, mm-hmm, or a rural Krishna conscious lifestyle, how do we think along those lines that really what we're dealing with within our own culture is a lot of misconception about the relationship between Bhagavad Dharma and Varnashram Dharma as you apply it locally, really locally, becoming native to this place. So I guess what I'm asking is what percentage of our efforts should be put into understanding this incredible amount of information and the detail of it as compared to just the act of prasad distribution on Sankirtan and rural Krishna conscious living? How do we make that decision? What's the governance behind making that decision?
You mean for ourselves individually or for our community?
Internally. Because as you say, if you don't have an example to show,
yeah,
then all the weighty philosophical information is meaningless.
Yeah. Well, the idea is that we cannot get away from the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and we need to promote, part of the, as Prabhupada explained, one of the main objectives of our society actually is to establish brahmanas, brahminical culture. So brahmanas means very select individuals who will be able to, give the time, who will have the necessary intelligence also to understand, the kind of depth of knowledge which is there. So that means a very small percentage, actually, of any given community. But that needs to be there, because that small percentage of individuals, they will give the proper direction for the whole project to develop, isn't it? Like the brahmana will be advising the king how to govern his kingdom. So, in other words, there's an absolute necessity for this, but it will be only, and then it will be filtered down, so to speak, in different ways, to to the general devotees. Our great fortune and our great, we have a special situation or unique situation in that simply by taking shelter of the holy name, for example, we remain sufficiently protected and we can make, sufficient advancement. It's not that we're going to be losing out because we're not becoming brahmanas like that. It's just that within society, there are, similar to brahmanas, kshatriyas also are few. Vaishyas, real vaishyas, somebody who can by himself make money, for example, or or be independent and economically thrive. Not everybody can do that. So definitely it's more challenging for all of us in Kali Yuga. At the same time, the basic knowledge is there for those who have some inclination and ability to more, you know, to give more time and attention to these concepts by studying, etc., like that. You know, Srila Prabhupada, even though he understood, you know, I mean, he introduced the concept of Gurukul in America, you know. So he knew very well that the people are totally out of the Vedic culture, but still, he felt it was important, and it still is important, because actually Varnashram Dharma and all of this knowledge will come when we have individuals who begin to learn it at a young age, isn't it? So those few selective individuals, when things are in proper place, they will become real assets, you know, for that community, or for other communities like that. So it remains, you know, to try and answer the question, it remains, I would say, of paramount importance, but it is not for everybody, you know, in terms of taking up such studies, etc., like that. But it gives us a little bit of an overview of, well, you know, there's really a lot of things, you know, there, and this knowledge is very profound and has been taken up throughout the years, throughout the centuries, and been transmitted by our various acharyas. And Srila Prabhupada has given us this legacy as well, and now it's up to us to deal with it, you know, as best as we can. Somebody else, yes.
When you mentioned something along the lines of there's deficiency in our society in terms of having qualified chakras.
Yes.
Because I see that we do have a lot of programs, schools, and to train the brahmanas.
Yeah.
Is there anything to train the kshatriyas? I'm not sure. Is there anything happening actually?
I'll talk about that tomorrow.
Yeah, okay.
Because we're all...
I have another question.
Yeah. I'll talk about that tomorrow too. Yeah, some people think like that.
So do we need it, you know?
Tomorrow. Yeah. Hare Krishna.
I would like to thank all the devotees for coming tonight. I think we all had a wonderful presentation by this one, Miss Bhaktivedanta Maharaj. He has given all of us, or at least for me, a number of very new perspectives. And I think we could all see that he has deeply researched, studied, and experienced the 50% Srila Prabhupada was unable to give to us. So I'm really looking forward for the next 2 days. And I would like to thank him and give him three Hari Bol.
Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
So all of you notice we have some prasad at their restaurant.
Oh.
Maharaja. If you want to join us, you're more than welcome. Most probably you have your separate organization.
No, I don't eat at night.
Whatever.
But I can sit with the devotees
okay.
And associate.
Please join us and spread the word for tomorrow night, 5 to 7 p.m. again. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much. About the verse for tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm not really that qualified, but, and I didn't have much time to really look.
Yeah.
But I have some ideas, but ultimately it's really up to you.
Because
I couldn't, you know, I said I'm not really that knowledgeable. So my idea, but that was that
this is from Chaitanya Charitamrita.
That to show the connection between Lord Balaram, who is actually serving Krishna in so many ways, so like living off land, it's related. Vrishala Maharaj says that he's in charge of the plow department.
Yeah.
So to make the connection between Balaram and Varnashram Dharma, living, you know, for protection and
okay.
I don't know, that's my idea, but you please choose whatever you... That's for one day, and I was thinking maybe this verse, but I'm really not sure if this is the best one. But it's CC, but it's okay.
Okay, that's fine.
That's fine?
This book can be there tomorrow morning?
Yeah, I will have it. So I will put that one. And another for the Wednesday, I said my thing is that to talk about Balaram as a... representative or spiritual master,
okay.
And I like the I'm not sure what was the verse, but have a firm conviction in the word of spiritual master.
Mm-hmm.
You said about one verse today. What was that verse?
Asradhana Purusha. It is 9.3, I think.
9.3?
Yeah, Bhagavad Gita.
Bhagavad
Gita.
It's not Bhagavad. So we cannot have it on the board, can we have Bhagavad Gita first? Or what we could have it with faith in the words of, I mean, that's my idea, but please choose what, you know, that's my Balaram spiritual master and the conviction in Prabhupada's or spiritual master.
There must be something there, I suppose, in Bhagavatam, but I can't think.
I will try to look and see.
Yeah.
But if you have something else, please
don't
feel like, I have my own ideas, but I don't have to impose. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, careful, there's a glass.
Oh, yeah. Very nice.
It's a little heavy, a lot of material, actually.
Yeah. My understanding is that devotional service is the glue that holds all these,
of course,
everything together.
Yeah.
It brings about the change for that classless realization.
Without bhakti, it's not going to happen.
If we continue to think, I'm this body, he's that body, he knows. But if you look at devotees like Jayananda,
mm-hmm.
who most of the time look like they were just, you know, greasy and doing mechanic work. But if you get to the consciousness of that living entity, you'll see that he's Krishna conscious. And, you know, I think this whole, it's like Charles was saying about the caste, and, you know, it's a kind of a, people get afraid of him. But if we actually develop that Krishna consciousness,
mm-hmm.
then these things, there's no...
I was trying to, I mean, I gave that example of, which is a proper example, isn't that we know that externally we agree to play the drama. It's kind of like a drama. Nice example, actually, that Prabhupada gives. But we know it internally that everyone in that system is a servant of Krishna, a devotee of Krishna. And that's why the nice word that Prabhupada has chosen, it is classless in that we're not having any ego trip with this one because he's of a so-called higher class or whatever, or caste rather. So everyone is valued.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone is valued in the Daiva Varnashrama because sometimes when we make presentations, some aspects may not have been, you know, brought out sufficiently, but that maybe that's something that they can do.
There's one story, and I don't know who it was. This Mataji was scrubbing the floor in the temple, and she was calling out to Krishna, "Oh, Krishna, please help me." And continuously calling out. And the sannyasi came in and blew his mind. because he had introspection. He said, I'm not personally calling out to Krishna. And I am a sannyasi. You know, at least that's the drum up, the roll in the drum. So he was humbled. And he saw that this Mataji, he felt was more advanced because she was
crying out to Krishna.
Crying out to Krishna. Yeah. And, I don't know, when I used to travel, my mind was blown so many times. Just especially in Russia and these countries where they're doing so much with so little. It's like I cried my way through. You know, seeing these kids who have got such hardships.
Right. It humbles us at times.
So that
is definitely a danger when you start dealing in terms of varnasrama, because externally we're dealing with designations, but that's why the point you're making is very, very nice point, very important also. Always we have to be alert in terms of the consciousness, and therefore not be on the designation bodily platform, even though we are accepting to play an external role for the sake of managing and organizing society, so to speak.
If you take another point, which is the main point in our philosophy, dasa dasa and dasa. I mean, again, it comes back to consciousness.
So that means somebody within the system, as you pointed out as well, somebody who is not a brahmana or is not a sannyasi can be more advanced than it has nothing to do, one's advancement has nothing to do with that particular designation.
There was another, this isn't, when I heard it, it wasn't in a Krishna conscious context, but it applies. I'm trying to remember which war it was. Anyway, any war could be an example.
Right.
And if you take it back to the book distributors, in a war, to keep a soldier on the front line with his rifle, doing that chakra activity, how many backup personnel does it take? And in that particular instance, they said to 9 personnel. The cook, who's feeding, the guy who's peeling the potatoes. So if you go back to the Prabhupada's army, getting that book distributor on the front line with those weapons of Maya's destruction, intellectual upliftment or whatever, spiritual. Everybody who keeps that book distributor on the front line is an integral part. But whether it's just, like Jayananda continuously kept the Sankirtan vehicles running.
Right.
It was grease. The cook was cooking, the driver was offering, so that they could have shot him all the way up. So it's humbling. It's humbling, especially when I can't do a lot of things, but I see everybody has their specialty, it's got a mesh, and have that appreciation.
Right.
And one thing that Prabhupada always did, he said, "Thank you very much." So that appreciation, it didn't matter what you were doing. You didn't have to be a big book distributor. And one more story, and then I'll let you go. There was one Mataji. And a lot of times Mataji's really we're allowed to go on the walks in the morning with Prabhupada, a few select.
Right.
So this one Mataji, her service was cleaning the floor in Prabhupada's quarters when he's out in his book. But her service was always the last because, you know, people are scurrying about changing this and changing that, putting new flowers and, you know.
Right.
So the floor is the last. It's like in the pujari house too, during puja. Everything is done, then the floor.
Right.
And you're backing up. You know,
correct.
As you're, so she's praying. You know, she knows Prabhupada comes back at a certain time. So she's looking at her watch and she said, got 10 minutes.
Right.
She's washing, she's getting close to the door. And the door opens. She kind of looks at her watch, oh no, it's early. And she's praying, oh please, don't let it be Prabhupada.
And it's Prabhupada.
And she looks up, and what does Prabhupada do? He says, thank you very much. So that, this consciousness, we won't see these other things. I mean, I'm a very simple person. Anyway, that's my...
that's nice. sometimes when we get into discussions, we end up doing a lot of philosophizing. But some of these basic points are nice to bring us to bring up to remind us that although we speak about in the context of our ashram these different. But the most important thing is the level of consciousness of an individual and how Krishna and Prabhupada appreciates and looks at that, especially the external thing is secondary.
It's like that comment that Stamba made, or Samba. Permaculture? Okay, very well. What we're interested in is permaculture.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Lord.
I'll be here tomorrow.
Okay, great.
Oops.
Hare Krishna. Yes.